I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
My question to you, are mobs shouting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, or long live the infantata? Are those anti-Semitic comments?
When I hear those terms, I find them very upsetting.
The president of Columbia University is grilled at a congressional hearing about anti-Semitism on campus and what critics call the silencing of pro-Palestinian voices. We'll be joined by two Barnard Columbia professors. One of them signed an open letter from Jewish professors calling the hearings a new McCarthyism. But first, the University of Southern California cancels the commencement address of its valedictorian for what it claimed were safety reasons after she became the subject of an online anti-Palestinian hate campaign.
I was contacted by the administration on Monday, actually this past Monday, shortly before the statement was released, that I would unfortunately no longer be allowed to give the commencement address for the class of 2024.
We'll speak with Asna Tabassum. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have killed at least 11 people, including 5 children, in strikes on the southern city of Rafah. Israel's repeatedly attacked the city ahead of an expected ground invasion. There are new reports the Biden administration has approved Israel's plan to attack Rafah in exchange for Israel not launching counterstrikes on Iran. A 13-year-old Palestinian boy who survived an Israeli airstrike on his home in November has now died after being hit in the head with a package that was being dropped from the sky. Zain Orak died Sunday. The airstrike in November had killed 17 members of his extended family. This is Zain's grandfather, Ali Orak.
The first time when the house was hit by a strike, he came out from under the rubble with wounds in his head, hand and leg. God saved him. Then, like the rest of the youth and children, because of hunger and frustration, he went to get a meal, a can of fava beans, a kilogram of rice or flour. The worst catastrophe is the one that makes you laugh. They kill my family and send meals for those who are left. And the one who followed the meal died as a child.
ProPublica has revealed a special State Department panel has urged the Biden administration to disqualify multiple Israeli military and police units from receiving U.S. aid over serious human rights abuses, including rape and torture. Secretary of State Antony Blinken received the recommendation in December, but has not taken any action. Meanwhile, the UN refugee agency UNRWA has accused Israeli security forces of torturing imprisoned UN workers in an effort to extract false confessions about the agency's ties to Hamas. The accusations are part of a new UNRWA report that documents how Palestinians detained in Israel have been attacked by dogs, deprived of food, forced into cages, beaten with metal bars, and tortured with nail guns and electric batons. One Palestinian child released from Israeli prison had dog bite wounds on their body. In Brussels, a speech by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen was interrupted when a member of the audience attempted to make a citizen's arrest.
Mrs. von der Leyen, this is a citizen's arrest. You are charged with aiding genocide in Gaza. You expressed total support for Israel at the beginning of this genocide. The blood of Palestinian children is on your hands. You are a criminal, Mrs. von der Leyen. You should be in The Hague. You should not be here. You should not be running for a second term. You are a war. You are a criminal. Free Palestine! Free Palestine!
The person speaking was David Cronin, an editor at the Electronic Intifada news site. He laid out his arguments again, Ursula von der Leyen, in a piece on the website, which details ongoing efforts to support Israel, even as evidence of genocide and war crimes pile up. Google has fired 28 workers who protested its $1.2 billion contract with Israel. Project Nimbus provides computing services to the Israeli military. This comes after peaceful sit-ins this week by Google workers at their New York City and Sunnyvale, California offices, which resulted in 9 arrests. Kate Sim, a child safety policy advisor and one of the terminated workers, said, quote, "Listen when employers tell you exactly who they are. McCarthyism is alive and well. Look how terrified they are of worker power," they said. Two of the Google workers who were fired, Mohamed Khatami and Ray Westrick, appeared on Democracy Now! Wednesday, hours before their dismissal. In more protest news, 29 authors and translators have withdrawn from consideration for PEN America's prestigious literary prizes to protest the organization's leadership and silencing of Palestinian voices. In a letter, the authors wrote, quote, "We refuse to be honored by an organization that acts as a cultural front for American exceptionalism. We refuse to gild the reputation of an organization that runs interference for an administration aiding and abetting genocide with our tax dollars. And we refuse to take part in celebrations that will serve to overshadow Penn's complicity in normalizing genocide," they wrote. On Capitol Hill, activists disrupted Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin as he spoke at a House Armed Services Committee hearing on Wednesday. Among the protesters was Nasiba Hajjaj, a Palestinian-American woman who's lost some 20 relatives in Gaza since October 7th. She held up her 16-month-old son, Hamza, during the hearing.
My child is human.
Chair notes the service of the committee.
Stop killing Palestinian children.
House Speaker Mike Johnson has released the text of 3 bills to provide $95 billion to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. A vote could come on Saturday. Johnson's speakership may also be on the line as 2 Republican lawmakers have backed his ouster in part over his support for sending money to Ukraine. In other news from Capitol Hill, the Democratic-controlled Senate has dismissed impeachment charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. This ends a Republican effort to remove him from office. Record rainfall soaked large parts of Oman and the United Arab Emirates this week, killing at least 19 people and submerging major cities. Some areas received a year's worth of rain in just a day. Though heavy rains are expected this time of year, scientists say they're becoming more intense and more deadly because of climate change. Meanwhile, major flooding in Kenya has killed dozens of people and displaced thousands of others. French police forcibly evicted some 450 people, mostly migrants and asylum seekers, from France's largest squat, located in a Parisian suburb. Housing and immigrant rights advocates say it's part of a plan to remove unhoused people and refugees from Paris ahead of the Summer Olympics. Buses were waiting to bring residents of the squat to other cities, even though many of them have jobs in the Paris area, and some families have children attending local schools. And on Capitol Hill, 2 Boeing whistleblowers did not hold back as they described to a Senate panel the chaotic manufacturing and dysfunctional safety culture at Boeing. Sam Salapour, a quality engineer at Boeing, detailed the suppression and threats faced by employees who try to warn Boeing about its planes.
I want to make clear that I have raised these issues over 3 years. I was ignored. I was told not to create delays. I was told, frankly, to shut up. At one point, Boeing management got sick of me and raising these issues and moved me out of the 787 program into the 777 program.
But Salapour says the Boeing 777 program he was reassigned to also had serious issues.
I literally saw people jumping on the pieces of the airplane to get them to align. I call it the Tarzan effect, among other improper methods. Again, I raised concerns internally. I was sidelined. I was told to shut up. I received physical threats.
Ed Pearson, a former manager at Boeing, also told lawmakers both Boeing leadership and federal regulators failed for years to heed internal warnings, even after the Lion Airlines and Ethiopia Airlines crashes in 2018 and 19 that killed all 346 people on board. This is Ed Pearson.
The world is shocked to learn about Boeing's current production quality issues. I'm not surprised, because nothing changed after the two crashes. There was no accountability. Not a single person from Boeing went to jail. Hundreds of people died, and there's been no justice. Unless action is taken and leaders are held accountable, every person stepping aboard a Boeing airplane is at risk.
Ed Pearson also called out the investigation into January's Alaska Airlines door blowout, revealing Boeing deliberately withheld data related to work on the aircraft. Pearson told lawmakers, quote, "I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cover-up," he said. To see our interview with Ed Pearson, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Today, we'll look at the repression of pro-Palestinian voices on campuses across the United States. In a moment, we'll look at Wednesday's congressional hearings, where the president of Columbia University was grilled for hours about accusations of anti-Semitism on campus. But we begin with the University of Southern California, which continues to be rocked by controversy after canceling the commencement speech of its valedictorian for what it claimed were safety reasons after she became the subject of an online anti-Palestinian hate campaign.
Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez and I interviewed Asna Tabassum, who is a first-generation South Asian American Muslim, on Wednesday. I began by welcoming her to Democracy Now!
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So why don't you give us the chronology of what happened? I mean, to be the valedictorian of this elite university, the University of Southern California, is such an enormous achievement. Can you talk about when you learned you'd become the valedictorian and when you learned you would be giving the speech at graduation and what happened next?
Absolutely. So part of the selection process of becoming valedictorian is the willingness to give a speech during commencement. And so when I got the call, I believe in the second week of March or so, it was during Ramadan, and I was incredibly happy to receive the honor and incredibly grateful. And that was the moment I also knew that I would have the chance and the opportunity to address my peers during commencement.
And when did you hear that the university had changed its mind, and who contacted you?
Of course. So I was contacted by the administration on Monday, actually this past Monday, shortly before the statement was released, that I would unfortunately no longer be allowed to give the commencement address for the class of 2024.
How typical is that, Asna? Does the valedictorian always give the speech?
Yes, as far as I know in history of USC, and in fact, I asked the provost this himself, has this ever happened to a USC valedictorian? And in fact, I think we both agreed that to the best of our knowledge, it has never happened before.
And what exactly did he say when he explained to you it was for safety reasons? Did he talk to you about what the threats are?
So that's exactly the question here, is that I received no details as to what the security threats or what the security concerns were. You know, I heard that there were hundreds and thousands of emails sent to the university, but I was given no clue as to what the contents of these emails were, as well as, for example, the university had said that there were other security concerns in relation to having a big event such as commencement. But, you know, even details there were unclear. And so when I had asked for details regarding the security concerns, for example, were they security concerns about me or my classmates, I was offered no information and was told it was not appropriate for me to know.
Now, were you aware that pro-Israel student groups were targeting you on social media, that a group called We Are Tav posted a photo of you on its Instagram account and claimed that you were, quote, openly, that you openly promote anti-Semitic writings?
It's honestly heartbreaking. Yes, once I was announced on social media through USC student media, it only took a few hours before such posts began circulating. And it launched a very generalized and honestly very hateful and disappointing campaign to remove me as valedictorian, yes.
I want to go to the issue that wasn't raised by the provost, but in your Instagram bio, you link to a pro-Palestine landing page that reads in part, "Learn about what's happening in Palestine and how to help. Some students took to social media to express their opposition to it due to the language on the landing page. The website states, quote, Zionism is a racist settler colonial ideology that advocates for a Jewish ethno-state built on Palestinian land. The website also states, quote, one Palestinian state would mean Palestinian liberation and the complete abolishment of the state of Israel," end quote. Can you talk about that and talk about when you linked to that page and your feelings about this?
Sure. So there are a few points that I'd like to clarify. The first is that a university and students have the responsibility to engage in productive and meaningful discussion. And we're allowed to learn from one another's ideas and express those ideas so that we can all grow. And I think that that's the beauty of an academic institution. But another factor that I'd like to bring up is that there are other pieces of information in that link. You know, there are paragraphs and information relating to the two-state solution as well as the one state. The sentence right after the one you just quoted talks about coexistence between Arabs and Jews. You know, there's a lot of factors here, and my goal in putting the link in my bio is simply to inform my fellow peers in the small ways that I can. But ultimately, what I want people to take away is for people to inform themselves, come to their own conclusions, and then advocate for what they believe in. And so in no way am I advocating for hate. I'm only advocating for human equality and for the sanctity of human life when I say that Palestinians, as well as Jews, as well as Muslims and Armenians and anyone else who is invested in this conflict has the equal right to life and the equal privilege of the fullest extent to life.
Well, could you tell us more about yourself? You're majoring in biomedical engineering and minoring in resistance to genocide. What inspired you to follow these courses of study?
This is my favorite question, especially because, you know, as you might know, I've been doing a lot of interviews recently, and I wish people more talked about my biomedical engineering major as well, because I think it's an important part of who I am and my worldview. That being said, the way that I see my major and my minor working together for the very same goal is that, you know, my minor in resistance to genocide allows me to study the human condition at possibly one of its worst conditions. And then biomedical engineering is my way of learning technically how we can improve the human condition through increasing health accessibility. And so the ways that I specifically see this are, for example, when I learn about the Rwandan genocide or the Holocaust or various other forms of genocides and conflicts through my minor, I look at the ways in which healthcare and health are impeded and the ways in which the quality of life are impeded so that I can build devices and health technologies using my major and using the education and the information I learned in my major of biomedical engineering to see how we can develop low cost and accessible point of care devices so that we can improve the ways in which people experience healthcare when they are at their most in need of healthcare.
Can you talk about if you were giving the speech? I mean, this speech would be given in May, right, at graduation. So isn't there still a possibility that USC could change their mind? What would your speech be? What would you say to the USC community?
So, you know, I actually have not considered and actually started writing my speech, but of course, this experience is informing me how I want to go about it. But ultimately, my message is one of hope. I think something that I truly believe in, given my familial background and, you know, the way I was raised, is that education is such a privilege. And using the ways that we have learned how to learn, it's incumbent upon us to look at the world and see what we see, and then take information and make conclusions so that we can change the world in the ways that we want to. And so, in accordance with my message of hope, I also want to do a message of inspiration so that our graduates and my peers can feel empowered to take on issues of world concern and see themselves in positions of making change.
You've talked about an online hate campaign against you. Can you describe more what you have received?
Sure. I've received incredibly disappointing comments. And I think it's an unfortunate part of, expressing who you are and expressing what you believe in. But I do want to call attention to the overwhelming support. And I think that anybody who is watching this unfold is seeing that various communities, from Muslim communities to Jewish communities to South Asian and first generation American communities, all coming together to see this as something bigger and as something representative of a collective voice. And so, you know, while there is hatred out there, I do want to give my kudos to the people who have been seeing the inspiration and seeing the hope as this unfolds.
University of Southern California valedictorian Asna Tabassum. She joined us Wednesday on Democracy Now! After USC canceled her commencement speech for what it claims are safety reasons, after Asna became the subject of an online hate campaign. Coming up, Columbia University president is grilled at a congressional hearing about anti-Semitism on campus and what critics are calling the silencing of pro-Palestinian voices. We'll be joined by two Barnard Columbia professors. One of them signed an open letter from Jewish professors calling the hearings a new McCarthyism. We'll also hear from students who've camped out on Columbia's lawn. Stay with us.
My name is Joe McCarthy. I'm the leader of the band. I don't play in the concert hall, but on the witness stand. I have the finest orchestra in Washington, D.C. And night and day, I love to play McCarthy Symphony. Well, Jenner howls and Veldy yowls and Muntz says, pour it on. The drums go bang, the cymbals clang from Maine to Oregon. And Hickenlooper tunes the flute as victims take the stand. The finest music in the land is Joe McCarthy's band. Toodly-doo,
toodly-doo,
try to sue,
try to sue.
Toodly-doo,
toodly-doo,
just try to sue,
just try to sue.
But toodly-doo,
toodly-doo,
I'll tell you more, but I'll never say it off the Senate floor. When I started chasing communists, I claimed 205. And then I said 'twas 81 to keep the thing alive. Then 57 varieties of reds and pinks galore. They're climbing on the ceiling and they're creeping on the floor. Toodly-doo,
toodly-doo,
try to sue,
try to sue.
Toodly-doo,
toodly-doo,
just try to sue.
Joe McCarthy's Band by Joe Glazer. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
The president of Columbia University was grilled at a congressional hearing Wednesday about allegations of anti-Semitism on campus. In nearly 4 hours of grueling testimony before the Republican-led Committee on Education and the Workforce, Minouz Shafik said she'd taken serious action against the accusations, including dismissing or removing 5 faculty members from the classroom in recent months for comments related to Israel's assault on Gaza, as well as suspending 15 students and 2 student groups, Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace. Shafik's visit to Capitol Hill came after a December hearing that led to the resignations of the presidents of Harvard University and the University of Pennsylvania.
In the run-up to the congressional hearing, a group of Jewish faculty at Columbia and Barnard penned an open letter addressed to President Shafik, expressing their concerns about, quote, the false narratives that frame these proceedings to entrap witnesses, and labeling the hearings a, quote, new McCarthyism. During yesterday's testimony, Lisa McClain, The Republican Congress member from Michigan questioned Shafiq over a number of pro-Palestinian slogans, including from the river to the sea.
My question to you, are mobs shouting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, or long live the infantada? Are those anti-Semitic comments?
When I hear those terms, I find them very upsetting. And I have heard...
That's a great answer to a question I didn't ask, so let me repeat the question. When mobs or people are shouting from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free, or long live the infantada, are those anti-Semitic statements? Yes or no? It's not how you feel, it's...
I hear them as such. Some people don't. We have sent
a clear message. So is that yes?
We have sent a clear message to our community.
I'm not asking about the message. Yeah. Is that fall under definition of anti-Semitic behavior? Yes or no? Why is it so tough?
Because it's a difficult issue because
some people hear it as anti-Semitic. But here's the problem. When people can't answer a simple question and they have a definition, but then they can't, well, I'm not really sure if that qualifies.
So
I'm asking a simple question. Maybe I should ask your task force. Does that qualify as anti-Semitic behavior, those statements? Yes or no? Yes. Okay.
Later in the hearing, Republican Georgia Congressmember Rick Allen brought up the Bible in his questioning of Shafiq. He cited the Old and New Testament and asked Shafiq if wanted Columbia University to be cursed by God.
Are you familiar with Genesis 12:3?
Probably not as well as you are, Congressman.
Well, it's pretty clear it was the covenant that God made with Abraham. And that covenant was real clear. If you bless Israel, I will bless you. If you curse Israel, I will curse you. And then in the New Testament, it was confirmed that all nations would be blessed through you. So you do not know about that.
I have heard that. Now that you've explained
okay.
it, yes,
so
I have heard that
it's
before.
It's now familiar. Do you consider that a serious issue? I mean, do you want Columbia University to be cursed by God of the Bible?
Definitely not.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Much of the questioning on Wednesday focused on Columbia's handling of faculty. New York Republican Congressmember Elise Stefanik led the charge. She grilled the president about her testimony on both the protests at Columbia and about Professor Joseph Massad, a professor of modern Arab politics who chairs an academic review committee.
And Dr. Shafiq, you realize that at some of these events, the slurs and the chants have been F the Jews, death to Jews, yep. F Israel, no safe place, death to the Zionist state, Jews out. You don't think those are anti-Jewish?
Completely anti-Jewish, completely unacceptable.
So you changed your testimony on that issue as well? So there have been anti-Jewish protests.
I didn't get to finish my sentence. So what I was going to say was there were protests that were called
That's not what you were asked. You were asked, were there any anti-Jewish protests? And you said no.
So the protest was not labeled as an anti-Jewish protest.
I'm not asking what it was labeled.
Anti-Israeli government policy.
The question wasn't what it was labeled.
But anti-Semitic incidents happen, or anti-Semitic things were said. So I just
wanted to finish. It is an anti-Jewish protest. You agree with that? You change your testimony?
Congresswoman. Anti-Jewish things were said at protests, yes.
Thank you for changing your testimony. Another instance when you changed your testimony is you stated that Professor Massad was no longer chair. Then you stated he's under investigation. He is still chair on the website. So has he been terminated as chair?
Congresswoman, I want to confirm the facts before getting back to you.
I know you confirmed that he was under investigation.
Yes, I can confirm that.
Did you confirm he was still the chair?
I need to confirm that with you. Let me ask you this.
Will you make the commitment to remove him as chair?
I think that would be, I think I would, yes.
In a statement emailed to Democracy Now!, Professor Joseph Massad said Republicans had, quote, fabricated statements about him and that it was, quote, news to him that he was under investigation. He said no one had spoken to him about his chairmanship of the committee in question. For more, we're joined by two guests. Nara Milanich is a professor of history at Barnard College, part of Columbia University, who co-wrote an open letter to President Shafik titled "Jewish Faculty Reject the Weaponization of Antisemitism." Professor Milanich is a member of the American Association of University Professors, or AAUP. And Professor Rebecca Jordan-Young is also with us, professor in the Department of Women's, Gender, and